We're in the middle of Torah Hay in Likutim on Tanina. We're up to paragraph Zayin. But we're going to review what we had till now because of the difficulty of this chapter as far as keeping track. We're going to try to summarize the different ideas we had till now and pick up from where we left off. Rabbi Nizal started off in this Torah by saying that the main thing is emuna, and each person has to search himself constantly and study himself and analyze himself to see where he's holding in emuna, in faith in Hashem, in faith in tzaddikim, and the person has to do everything possible to strengthen himself in faith, in emuna. And Rabbi Nizal explained that because through any kind of deficiency or defect in emuna, this causes the person to have makos muflois, wondrous types of illnesses. What's wondrous about them, Rachmana Litzlan? The fact that these are illnesses for which tefillah can't help, and zechusavos can't help, and medication can't help, because Rabbi Nizal showed how for all of these things to be able to affect a cure, it requires emuna. Tefillah, zechusavos, medication, all requires emuna. They all come from emuna. And Rabbi Nizal said that when a person falls from emuna, all of these things, chas v'shalom, can't help the person. The only thing that could possibly help the person is a tza'okam in halev. If the person screams out to Hashem from the depths of his heart, that screaming from the depths of the heart brings forth etzos, advice for the person, and that advice is what's going to help bring about a solution to his problem. Because Rabbi Nizal said, when is the main time for strengthening one's emuna? The main time is towards the end of night, meaning as the night begins to leave, as the darkness begins to move away, the more the person gets closer to the daytime, that's when the emuna has a strengthening. Rabbi Nizal brought the pasuk ve'emunascha balelos, that the main tikkun ha'emuna is at night, and it happens throughout the night, so that as the person gets closer to morning, where the light of morning starts to shine, the pasuk says chalf and start fresh, a new morning begins. This causes an increase, an increase to the emuna. And Rabbi Nizal explained that through a fall, and this brings about a cure for the person, because Rabbi Nizal quoted the pasuk Oz Yiboka Kashachar Oirecha, that when the light begins to shine forth like the morning star, Va'aruchascha Mehira Tatzmiach, then your cure will be affected very quickly. Your cure will grow quickly. When does this happen? When Yiboka Kashachar Oirecha, when the person's light shines forth like the morning star, meaning when the emuna gets its tikkun at night, up until the point of the morning star coming up, that's when the emuna has a tikkun.
The daylight makes one feel...
The answer is, Rabbi Nizal seems to say here that as the morning, when the new morning begins, that's a time for a refreshing of the emunah. That's a time when the emunah gets refreshed. That throughout the night, the person is strengthening himself in emunah. He's sort of reactivating the power of emunah. And the time when it reaches its peak in reactivation is the morning. And we could even explain why a little bit. Because of the fact that we know that there's two concepts. There's a concept of seichel, das, knowledge, and emuna. Emuna is faith, which is the absence of knowledge, the absence of seichel. When is a time when a person closes his eyes, which means closes his mind, where he shows that he's depending completely on the emuna? At night, when a person goes to sleep, the act of closing his eyes shows that he's closing his seichel, and his attachment to Hashem becomes an attachment that's dependent on faith. During the daytime, I wake up in the morning, I'm in a position, I open my eyes, I begin to study. The act of the eyes being open alone, the pasuk says, "Vatipokachno einei shneim." The eyes represent pikeach, seichel, wisdom. A person with his eyes, he learns. When the eyes are closed, the seichel is closed, which means what is the person defaulting to? When the seichel isn't working, the person is defaulting to emunah, to faith. So the nighttime is generally supposed to be a time for a strengthening of the faith. You'll note that that's why when we say the Kriya Shema, which represents a person's emunah in Hashem, what do? We close our eyes. We close our eyes and we cover them over to show that the eyes represent the seichel, that a person's true acceptance of faith in Hashem is an acceptance of something that he doesn't understand, something that he can't see. If you can see something, there's nothing to believe. If you see it, you know it. The only time that the term faith comes into play is in what you don't see and what you don't understand, to be able to believe that also. That's represented by the concept of nighttime, where we close our eyes, or the concept of the Kriya Shema, where we, again, close our eyes and cover our eyes. Okay, so Rabbi Nizal said that also through a fall in the Emunah, when there's a fall in the Emunah HaKdaisha, this brings about a strengthening to the wrong types of faiths, to the types of faiths of the Goyim, Rachmon Adatzlan. And Rabbi Nizal said through a Chizuk Emunah, when the Emunah gets fixed up, when the fallen Emunah gets fixed up, what happens is this brings about Gerim, this brings about converts. The whole concept of converts is brought about when a Jew fixes up his own fallen emunah. And Rabbi Nizal said this issue of converts manifests itself sometimes in a physical sense, where a person actually converts, a goy actually converts to Judaism. And Rabbi Nizal said sometimes this happens bekoyach, meaning not where the goy actually converts, but he becomes attracted to a faith in a yichud of Hashem, in one Hashem, within his religion. In other words, within his own books, within the confines of his own religion, he finds himself drawn to Hashem. Then Rabbi Nizal continued to explain that these converts who become attracted to Judaism through a tikkun ho'emunah, through a chizuk ho'emunah, they also present certain problems for the Jews, because we find the Gemara says that gerim are as harmful to the Jewish nation as a sore on a person's hand. So we see that there is some negative aspect to it, because Rabbi Nizal said that these gerim inject a gaiva, they bring a kavod into the Jewish people, which could be good, could be bad, because the Gerim, we said, the concept of Sapru Vagoyim Es Kavoidei, that when the Jews are downtrodden, where is the glory of the Jews? It's by the Goyim. In other words, the true glory of a nation in this world should be the glory of the Jewish people. When we find that nowadays the Jewish people are downtrodden, where has that glory gone? It's fallen among the Goyim. So that when a Goy comes and joins the Jewish religion, he brings with him a piece of this glory of the Jews, which was by the Goyim, it was detained by the Goyim, being held by the Goyim, he's bringing it back. Rabbi Nizal says sometimes that glory could fall into the wrong hands, and it could cause problems, it could cause damage. It falls into the hands of manhige hador, leaders of the generation, who are not appointed by Hashem, who are not ones that Hashem wants to be leaders, but they're sort of self-appointed. They have taken the leadership with a chutzpah, with an azus, and when this arrogance, when this glory falls into their hands, Rabbi Nizal calls it a cherev hagaiva, they use this to dominate, to rule over the people in a manner that Hashem doesn't appreciate and Hashem doesn't approve of, and they use this to do damage. Their leadership causes damage to the Jewish people. And that's the point that we were up to last week. The last chapter that we had learned, the last paragraph that we had learned, Sif Vov, was where Rabbi Nizal said that through the arrogance, through this glory falling into the wrong hands, this also causes a strengthening of Taivas Niyuf, the wrong type, an illicit type of desire for women. Because Rabbi Nizal quoted a pasuk in Mishlei where the pasuk says, Eshes Ish Nefesh Yikoro Totsud, that this type of sin, the sin of adultery, or the sin of illicit desire for women, is generally something that's attracted to people who are nefesh yikoro, who are arrogant, who have kavod. So these leaders who take this kavod in an illegal manner, they automatically cause a strengthening of this problem, this taivas niyuf, in the whole Jewish people. And Rabbi Nizal referred to it as the chaysam of the sitra achra. That's called the seal of the satan. Just like the chaysam of kedusha is Tikkun HaBris, the seal of Kiddusha. When, in other words, we call it, we refer to the seal of Hashem, the insignia of Hashem in each Jew. Where is it placed in each Jew? In the Bris Milah. When a child at the age of 8 days receives a Bris, a circumcision, that's when the child receives the Chosam of Hashem, the Chosam Bris. Whereas the opposite of that is the chosam of the sitrachra, the seal of the satan, is referred to as pigam habris. Now we're going to start from paragraph Zion, which is where we had left off. Rabbeinu Zal says now, if a person wants to be saved from this, meaning to be saved from all the problems that are caused to the Jewish nation by these wrong types of leaders who draw their power from these converts coming into Bnei Israel, Rabbeinu Zal says, who protects the Jewish people from this problem? The Moginim Shebedor, the protectors of the generation. That's the title that Rabbeinu Zal uses in this chapter of Likutei Moran when he refers to the Tzadikim Amitim. He calls them Moginim Shebedor, the protectors of the generation. Note, we find this term used by Avraham Avinu. We say in Shemoneh Esrei, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mogein Avraham. This term, Mogein, to protect, to shield, is a term that's used about Hashem or about Tzadikim. The Gemara says in many places that one of the main functions of a Tzadik is to shield the Jewish people, to protect them from any kitrug, anything bad, any evil decree from heaven, or from any attack of the goyim. And the Gemara actually brings stories of different rabbis, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, other tzaddikim, where the proof of their greatness, that which determined the barometer of their greatness, was the extent that they were able to protect the neighborhood around them, or how wide a radius, how wide a circumference around them they were able to protect the people. One tzaddik was able to protect people in a 50-mile radius around him. Another tzaddik, a 500-mile. So we find this term, mogein, is used about tzaddikim, is used about the leaders of the generation. We find also the Sifrei Kabbalah tell us that this term, mogein, mogein Avraham, refers specifically to a unit of three malachim who are known as the protectors of Hashem. In other words, they serve this function of protection, and they are the malach Michael, the Malach Gavriel, and the Malach Nuri Kael, whose name begins with the letter Nun. That's this Rashi Tevas Mogein. It's Michoel, Gavriel, and Nuri Kael, who, interestingly, why these three Malachim? Because we just said, who are the protectors of the Jewish people? The Tzadikim. What unit of three do we have among Tzadikim that's the most outstanding unit in leaders of the Jewish people? The three forefathers of the Jews, the Gimel Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I believe, I'm almost positive if I recall correctly, if you'll check, the gematria of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is begematria Michoel, Gavriel, and Nuri Kael. And that's the association when we say Mogein Avraham. In other words, that bracha is called the Birchas Ha'ovos, the blessing where we say Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. We want to draw upon ourselves the protection of the three forefathers of the Jews, and we seal the bracha, the chasimo is Avraham. By saying Mogein Avraham, that's Kailel, the other three. I believe, we'll check it afterwards maybe, I believe that that's the remez in the word Mogein, that it refers to these three angels who correspond, they in heaven, correspond to these three tzaddikim on earth, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now Rabbeinu Zal says, to be protected from this cherev hagaiva and from this problem of pigam habris, which is generated through this, is through the protectors, through the shields of the generation. Rabbeinu Zal explains, kiyesh mogine eretz, there are protectors of the world, shehem meginim aleinu umatzilen oisanu, they shield us and they save us. Kihem machniim hachaisam de sitrachra, they break the seal of the satan. Shenase al yedei hagaiva kanal, this seal of the satan, which is generated through this glory that was brought back into the Jewish people by these converts joining the Jewish people, these tzaddikim, they break that seal that was the seal of the satan that was created through this gaiva. Bebechinas, as the pasuk says, there's a pasuk in Iyov which says, gaiva afike moginim sogu Gur Chaisam Tsar. The Pusik says that this, the haughtiness of one who is shielded, he has a shield on him where the scales of the shield are very close together so that nothing can penetrate it. Sogur Chaisam Tsar. And his shield is also tied, locked very, very tightly to his body so that nothing, even somebody banging against him, couldn't dislocate the shield and allow it to be penetrated by any spear or sword or anything like that. So note here, we have the term the gaiva, which is associated with this moginim. In other words, this gaiva, there's a concept of a mogain against the gaiva, a shield against it, which is sogur chaysam tzor. Rabbi Nezal explains, shehim soigrim umachniim chaysam nesitrachra. These tzaddikim, they close off and they weaken this seal of the satan. They lock it up. They cause it, they make it, they neutralize it. In other words, they don't allow it to be able to function. Shehi bechinas taivo hanal. What is this chaisam of the satan? What is this seal of the satan? This refers to the taivas niyuf, this pigama bris. Shena salide gaivo kanal, which is brought about through gaivo. Which is brought about because we quoted the pasuk, "Eishesish nefesh yikara totsud." Note: we have by Adam Arishain, the first crime that was committed in this world, which the Sifrei Kabbalah tell us that there were a few things that Adam Arishain had done incorrectly. One of them was the fact that he didn't wait with his zivug. The fact that had he waited to have relations with Chava till Friday night, the whole world would have had a tikkun. If he would have waited till Shabbos, the whole world could have had its tikkun. The fact that he had it earlier, this was considered to him a concept of a pigam habris, in a sense, because his first association with Chava wasn't at the holiest time, which was Friday night. How was that brought about? Note how these things are tied together. The whole pigama, the Eitz Hadas, the Zohar Kodesh explains, was a pigam in gaiva. How did the Nochosh attempt to seduce them to eating from the Eitz Hadas? The Nochosh said, you know what made Hashem so smart? Hashem ate from this tree. That's what gave him the wisdom to be able to know how to create the worlds. If you'll eat from this tree, the Pasuk says, V'hi'isem kalekim. He tempted them with geus. You want to be great? You want to be as great as Hashem? Eat from this tree, you'll be as great as Hashem. It was this temptation of gaiva that caused them to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and this obviously automatically resulted in an aspect of pigam habris. Note, it's not that he committed adultery or anything like that, but it means that he didn't perform this act with the highest degree of holiness that was necessary. Rabbi Nezal says now, Va'al yidei shehei machniyim zayis hataiva, through the fact that these tzaddikim weaken and lower this desire, shehu bechinas chesim the sidrachra, which is called the seal of the satan, al yidei ze nase bechinas tfilin meichin shehim bechinas chesim likdusha. Through the fact that tzaddikim are the ones who work at weakening the seal of the satan, by weakening the seal of the satan, they cause a heightening and elevation to the seal of Kedusha. What is one of the manifestations of the seal of Kedusha? We said before, one of them was the Bris Milah. What's the second one? Tefillin. Tefillin is also a manifestation of the seal. Both of these things are called ice. Ice means an engravement, a sign on the person that he belongs to Hashem. Bris Milah is one of those signs, and tefillin is also called the chaysam of Kedusha. Rabbi Nezal says now, through the fact that these tzaddikim work at destroying this desire, breaking this desire, this taivas niyuf, and making it easier for the people in the world to combat this, through that they cause an elevation to the seal of Kedusha, which is the tefillin. Bechina, as the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Simeini kachoysam alibech kachoysam alzroyacha. The Pasuk Hashem says, place me as a seal on your heart, as a seal on your arm. And the Zohar Kodesh says that refers to the tefillin which are worn on the arm, corresponding to the heart, parallel to the heart. So we see that tefillin are referred to as a chaysam of Kedusha, a seal of Kedusha. Rabbi Nezal explains now, ki ikar tikun hamoichin al yidei shviras taivas niyuf. If a person thinks that he has any type of problem with his brain, Rabbi Nizal says he should know that the main tikkun of the brain is by breaking this desire for women. And you'll note there's a very obvious connection. The Gemara says in the beginning of Saita, La'ilam ein adam chayte, elim kei nichnas by ruach shtus. The Gemara says that the only way a person commits a sin with women is through a ruach shtus. Shtus means foolishness, which means that these two go together. That it's this type of sin, these types of bad thoughts about women or anything within that category of taivas niyuv, that causes a pigam in the brain. That causes a deficiency and a defectiveness in the brain. Rabbi Nizal says, and the main tikkun of the brain is by breaking this desire. And Rabbi Nizal is going to prove this. And note how this is going to tie in beautifully to our topic, to our current events, which is the holiday of Chanukah. Rabbi Nizal explains now, Ki ikar hamoyach al yidei lechus haguf. The main functioning of the brain is dependent on the lubricants of the body. Ki hamoyach hu kamoi ner doilek. The brain is compared to a candle that's burning. V'halechus shebeguf, the liquids of the body, heim oilim lahamoyach, they rise up to the brain, v'nasim shmonim el hamoyach, and they serve as oils to fuel this wick. The wick is the brain. The brain, kiner mitzvah v'toira oir, the light of toira. The brain is always referred to as a light. This wick, this fire that's burning in the brain, needs oil to fuel it. Where does the oil come from? That's the liquids of the body which lubricate the brain. Rabbi Nizal says, V'halechi shebeguf, heim oilim lahamoyach, they rise up to the brain, v'nasim shmonim lahamoyach, they serve as oils for the brain. Nimtza, what do we see from here? She'ikar hamoyach al yidei lechus v'shamnunis haguf. That what determines the quality of the functioning of the brain? These oils of the body that feed the brain. Al kein, therefore, al yidei shemachnin taivas niyuv, through a person's subduing this evil desire of taivas niyuv, ve'ein yaitzen lechus v'shamnunis haguf l'chutz. What's one of the most outstanding manifestations of taivas niyuv? What's the worst example of it? Zera levatol, Rachman al-Tzlan, where a person wastes his seed. This seed is represented as a concept of an oil, a liquid of the body, which when it's wasted, it means you're taking some of this oil, this pure oil, and spilling it out, Rahman al-Islam. If you spill it out, you're giving the candle less oil to burn with. So any act of pigama bris subtracts from the fuel that feeds the brain. Tikkun abris, when a person corrects this, he retains all the oil so that there is enough oil to fuel this candle that needs constant feeding by this oil. Now note, I'm not going to go into this now at length because two reasons. Number one, I didn't prepare this well, and because it's a little bit deep for our topic. But for those who can catch this, we once mentioned that the Sifrei Kabbalah bring that one of the names of Hashem that refers specifically to Tikkun Abris is the name of Hashem Beis Yud Tes. We say it on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in that special Yehi Ratzon where we refer to the Tikkun of Keri, which we mentioned many times. In that Yehi Ratzon, you'll note it highlights this name of Hashem, Beis Yud Tes. This is one of the hidden names of Hashem, and we refer to it in Tachnun when we say Habito Ureyes Cherposenu. Cherpa refers to shame. Shame refers specifically to Begam Abris. The word Habito, the hay in front and hay in back, refers to the two Shechinas, the upper Shechina and lower Shechina, that suffer a Yerida through a Pigam in this name, Beis Yud Tes. And there are many other, this isn't our topic now, so I don't want to get too involved in it. But what does relate to us is the fact that the Sifrei Kabbalah bring, you'll note, that this concept of Tikkun Abris is referred to as the oils that fuel the body, because you'll note that this name of Hashem, Beis Yud Tes, in Atbash, the reverse of this, a beis in Atbash becomes a shin, a yud in Atbash becomes a mem, and a tes in Atbash becomes a nun. So the Atbash, the word beis yud tes, is shemen, the word shemen, showing that this concept of shemen is an inyan of Tikkun Abris, which means, again, obviously, that this is part of the mitzvah of the candles of Chanukah, is mesugal to helping a person be zoicha to Tikkun Abris. Because Rabbi Nizal shows here that the whole inyan of shemen is an inyan of shmiras abris, Tikkun Abris. if possible, maybe next Sunday night, I'll look over that. Rebbe once gave a whole shiur on this name of Hashem, discussing all kinds of proofs throughout the Torah that explain this name of Hashem, where it comes from and what it refers to. Maybe if we'll get a chance, we'll talk about it more. But for now, this is enough.
Habris. Could this refer to all the taivas? Could this be a general category? Let's say somebody drinks too much.
The answer is factually, the Sifrei Kabbalah refer to this taiva as being the kolel. That in many ways, this is the evil which includes in it all the other ones. Meaning, for example, the Gemara says that most, for example, when a person has a desire for money, generally, what's he chasing the money for? Because with the money, he's going to get women. In other words, generally, everything sort of feeds into this item. This is called the Tikkun HaKloli in Kiddusha. It's written that if a person fixes this, he automatically fixes everything else. And if he messes this up, automatically it causes all the other problems that we said. Drinking this, that, all of them are tied into this. This is called the Madura Shel Shivim Kechavim. This is called the Inferno that encompasses within it all the evil of all 70 nations of the world. So in many ways, this is called like a kolel, a conglomeration of all the bad that exists, pretty much.
Because you know what destroys the mind is eating too much.
True.
Eating too much.
True. The answer is these items aren't tied together. There's no question about it. They're all called maisrois, a concept of maisrois. Okay, let's continue now. Rabbein Azal says, so when a person is zeichet to be machnia the taivas niyuv, through that he allows the shamnunas haguf, he prevents the shamnunas from going outside where it doesn't belong. Through that the lechus feeds the brain. And that's the ikra hamoichin. V'nase shmonim shezei ikra hamoichin. He creates these oils. He allows these oils to function properly, which they are the ikra hamoichin. Rabbein Azal says, al kain, therefore, al yidei hamoginim hanal, through these protectors, meaning these tzadikim, who are zeichet to real, true purity. In Tikkun HaBris, shemachni and taivazu, they're the ones who subdue this desire completely. Al kain, heim oisna, they are the ones who create the spiritual concept of tefillin. Tefillin represents the holiness of the brain, the meichen of kedusha. These tzaddikim are the ones who create the concept of tefillin. Kihem malin leches haguf. These tzaddikim elevate the liquids of the body mebechinas hechtim b'saray, from having been in the category of a defect in the flesh. This hechtim b'saray, the seal of the satan. And they create the opposite of that, the true brain, which is the concept of tefillin. Rabbein Azal says, "Ki tefillin heim hisnoitzitzus hamoichin," because we know that tefillin represent the shine of the brain. The true shine of the brain is represented in the tefillin. V'alkein, Rabbein Azal says, "V'alkein nikru hatefillin yikor." This is why we find that the word in the Megillah that's used to represent tefillin is the word yikor. Kamaisham Razal, as the Gemara says in Megillah, when the Pasuk says, La'yehudim haisa oira v'simcha v'sasayin v'kor, the word v'kor, the Gemara says in Megillah, v'kor elu tefillin. V'kor refers to tefillin, that on Purim we do wear the tefillin, especially in the morning during the reading of the Megillah, we must make sure to have our tefillin on at that time. So we see the word yikor refers to tefillin. Why? Ki hatefillin nas nal yidei tikun taivas niyuf. Because tefillin are created by perfecting this taivas niyuf, shehi bechinas eshes ish nefesh yekara totsud. The word yekar means glory, arrogance. We said before that arrogance, glory, this attitude is what attracts women. So therefore, tefillin, which represent the perfection of this, this wrong desire for women causes a weakening of the brain, a messing up of the brain. Tefillin, which represents the purification of the brain, the heightening of the brain, is called the yekar of kedusha. note the obvious connection that the word which represents Pigam Abris is the letters Kuf Reish Yud. Also, the Tikkun Abris is the opposite of that, called Yikor. Tefillin represents Tikkun Abris, the highest. That's why the Shulchan Aruch is very, very, very particular when it comes to Tefillin. That's, we have to be most careful that if a person, let's say, has to release any gas from his body or anything like that, anything related to the union of Tikkun Tefillin, you're not permitted to take into the bathroom, whereas Tzitzis, yes, in other words, things like this, Tefillin represent Meichen of Kiddusha, and Tefillin represent a very, very high level of Shmiras Habris. Therefore, a person has to be very, very careful, especially when wearing the Tefillin, not to have any outside thoughts, any Machshava Zorois. Rabbein Azal says now, V'alkein nikroin ha-tfilin pe'er. This is one of the reasons why tfilin are called pe'er in the Torah. We find the word pe'er, which means beauty, glory. That's one of the names that's given to tfilin. Why? Ki nas nal yidei tikkun ha-gaivo v'ha-hisparus shemevi'in ha-gerim kanal. We said before that when converts come and join the Jewish nation, they bring with them this glory of the Jews that had fallen into the hands of the Goyim. This glory could present a problem to the Jewish people. The Moginim Shebedoyer, they correct this problem, they fix this problem, they see to it that it shouldn't be a problem. Therefore, their fixing is also referred to as this concept of Pe'er, glory. Now Rabbein Azal says, V'zeh b'chinas u'moshe hoyo royeh. This is what the Torah refers to when the Torah says that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the leader of the Jewish people, he was a shepherd. Rabbein Azal says, Moshe hu hadas. Moshe Rabbeinu represents seichel, wisdom. He was the one who taught the Torah to Bnei Israel, the Torah which is the mokor hadas. The Pasuk says, Ato horeisol hadas ki Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu, you were the one who showed the people das. Seichel. So Moshe Rabbeinu represents das, bechinas meichen tefillin. Moshe Rabbeinu represents this concept of tefillin. V'ze bechina hu roye, he is a shepherd, hu roye dikdusha, he is a shepherd of kedusha. Hepech, which is the opposite of roye zoinois. We find this term shepherd is used in relation to znus. The pasuk says in Mishlei, v'roye zoinois yoivad hoin. A person who falls into this item of znus, this will cause him to lose his wealth, to become poor. So we see the term roye, shepherd, is used in relation to znus. The opposite of that, the leader of kedusha, the one who represents the tikkun abris, is called the shepherd of kedusha. The same term is used in an opposite manner. V'zeh b'chinas shiva royim dikdusha. Rabbein Azal says this is why we have the concept of seven shepherds of kedusha. B'chinas Moshe hoya roye. The pasuk says Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd. B'chinas tefillin. We said that Moshe Rabbeinu represents das, which is a concept of tefillin. Shin shel gimel roshin, shin shel dalid roshin, shehem b'chinas zayin royim kanal. The tefillin have on them the letter Shin in two forms. If you'll study your tefillin shel roish, you'll observe that it has the letter Shin in two ways. One Shin, a three-headed Shin, and a four-headed Shin. This three-headed Shin and four-headed Shin corresponds to the seven shepherds of Bnei Yisrael, the seven shepherds of the Jewish people. V'ze bechinas shakai shel tefillin. This refers to the name Shin Dalad Yud that's written on the tefillin. Ze bechinas hatzimtzum. The word dai means enough. The word dai means a constriction. Shetzorich kol echod v'yechod letzamtzeim esmoichoi v'sichloi. Rabbein Azal says, just as in the concept of Tikkun Abris, we say, what's the punchline in Tikkun Abris? Is it that a person should have nothing to do with women? Is that what the Torah wants? The answer is definitely not. The first mitzvah in the Torah, in fact, requires a man and woman being joined together. It involves dating and getting married and all association with women. What is the mitzvah of Tikkun Abris? The mitzvah is to restrict, to be metzamtzein, one's association with women. Note the Mishnah in Perkei Avos. It doesn't say don't speak to women. It says al tarbe sicho im hoisha, not to speak a lot. The main concept of Tikkun Abris is an inyan of to be metzamtzein. A person who is mashchizer al avatol rachman al son, what's his mistake? too much, Meisreis, he takes the Zera and places it lachutz, and it's not supposed to be lachutz, it's supposed to be very confined. This whole act of one's association with women is called Hilchus Tznius. It's supposed to be done in a very modest way, a very secluded way, a private way, a hidden way. The whole key to this mitzvah is privacy, hidden, tzanua, tzimtzum, constriction. The location of the bris kodesh, where is this organ found in the body? By a tzimtzum, v'hoyo shakai b'tzorecho, the pasuk says. The bris milah is in a crevice within the body, a very hidden place, and the whole key to the shleimus of this mitzvah is this tzimtzum. Rabbeinu Zal said that what does tikkun abris bring about? It brings about a tikkun for the brain. Therefore, Rabbeinu Zal says we find this concept of tzimtzum by the brain also. When a person wants to think, here also, in Judaism, is a person permitted to let his mind just think freely and go to any expanse he wants, to any expansion, mind expansion he wants? The answer is definitely not. There is a concept of b'mufla mimcho al tidroish u'b'mechusa mimcho al tachkor. There is a concept of thinking, asking questions that are classified as being too deep, which a person is not permitted to do. A person is not permitted to think about the crown of Hashem, certain other things that refer to the deepest secrets of the Torah, that a person is not permitted to think. So we see that these two items, which are associated with each other, the union of Tikkun HaBris and the brain, both necessitate this tzimtzum, a constriction, a containment, not allowing it to go too far outside. Now Rabbeinu Zal explains, "V'zeh b'chinas shakai shel tefillin." This is the reason why the name Shin Dalet Yud of Hashem is written on the tefillin. "Zeh b'chinas hatzimtzum." That refers to constriction. "Shetzorich kol echod v'echod letzamtzeim esmoichoi v'sichloi." A person has to see to it to constrict his brain and his wisdom. "Sheloi lohoniach esamoyach lotzeis chutz legvul sheyeshloi." Not to allow his mind to wander outside his boundary. Each and every single Jew, as we're going to explain in a minute, each and every single Jew has a boundary of what's considered deep thinking for him. Whatever is classified as too deep for him, that's what he's not permitted to think about. Not to allow his mind to fly off to a place that he doesn't have permission to have it wander into that place according to his madrega, according to his level. As the Gemara in Chagiga quotes the pasuk which says, in that which is wondrous to you, you're not permitted to discuss. In that which is hidden from you, you're not permitted to delve into. Shezehu b'chinas shakai. This is represented by that name of Hashem, the name Shin Dalet Yud, b'chinas tzimtzum, which refers to a concept of constriction. Ki shakai sheyesh dai b'leikusei l'chol beria. Because Rashi HaKodesh says in the Chumash that how does Hashem, what does this name of Hashem represent? The fact that one of Hashem's name is Shin Dalet Yud, it means she dai. That there is enough. This name of Hashem tells us that there is enough of Hashem for each and every single person. Hashem constricts himself in a manner to be able to be received by each and every person on his own level. Hainu, shekol beria yeshloi dai ugvul belekusi esporach. Rabbeinu Zal says the word dai means enough. The word dai also means a constriction, that each and every single person has a constriction for him. This person's level of constriction is 3.612. This person's level of constriction is 4.5. Each and every person has a certain tzimtzum, a certain boundary in which he's supposed to function and operate, and he's not permitted to go outside his boundary. For example, if a person on our level would try to study Torah to the extent or depth that our Rebbe studied it, would we be able to succeed? The answer is it would be too bright a light for us, because we don't have as well-developed a brain as he had. If we try to study certain Sforim, which he was able to study on his level, to us that would be classified as a bechin of ribuy oir, as a concept of pigam abris, in a sense. You're going outside your boundary. You're supposed to be contained within your limitations. If you go outside your boundary, that's a concept of this b'mufla mimcha al tidroish. Rabbein Zal says each person has a dai within religion, within elikus, where each person is permitted to go with his mind up until a certain boundary and not more than that. Rabbein Zal says ki kol echad v'echad yesh loy gvul v'tzimtzum b'sichloy. Each and every single Jew has a boundary and a constriction for his wisdom, lefi erkoi, according to his level, according to his own evaluation. Shafilu bikdusha osur loy lotzeis chutz legvul sheshloi. Even when it comes to holiness, even when it comes to mitzvahs, a Jew is not permitted to go outside his boundary. Note, if a person tries to be more religious than Hashem wants him to be, that's considered as much of a sin as being less religious. There is a boundary that was set up by Hashem, there is a boundary that was set up by tzaddikim. For example, we have the mitzvah of Shabbos. The mitzvah of Shabbos is to be pure and religious and not to touch a light, not to go in a car. If a person's wife gives birth on Shabbos, and although the rabbi said that pikuach nefesh is doicha kol haTorah kula, that this is a case where you're allowed to use a telephone, you're allowed to go into a car if necessary, other things like that, this person says, no, I can't see myself being defiling the Shabbos. That person ends up committing a crime. He's committing a transgression against Hashem because he's trying to be, in a sense, more religious than what Hashem wants. Hashem says that in this case, religion dictates violating the Shabbos. He tries to be more religious than Hashem, chas v'shalom. That's considered a sin. The whole concept of emunas chachomim, lo yisosur yomun usmoyo, not to go to the right or to the left, not to do more or less than what the rabbis tell us is the will of Hashem. So now Rabbein Zal says, Shafilu bikdusha osoloi lotzeis chutz legvul sheshloi. Even when it comes to holiness, a person is not permitted to go outside of the boundary that he has. Bebechinas, as the pasuk says very clearly, Bemufla mimcho al tidroish, Bemechusa mimcho al tachkor. Bechinas, just as we find that when Hashem was giving the Torah to the Jewish people in the beginning, what was the first command? The Jews were going up to receive the Torah on Har Sinai. You would picture Hashem telling them, make sure you run up there with tremendous spirit and happiness and jump and laugh. What was the Hashem's warning to them? The first thing that Hashem said was, Reishis Chachma, Yiras Hashem. The first command of Hashem was fear of Hashem. Hashem said, Pen yeresu el Hashem lirois. Be careful not to go too high, not to go up on the mountain. Those that are not permitted to go up on the mountain should be very careful not to dare to go up on the mountain, because if they do, they'll be killed. The light will be too blinding for them, and they'll be killed. Note, Rav Nosson Zal brings in Likutei Halachos, I was going to speak about this coming Shabbos, but everything's hashgacha. This is the remez in the mitzvah of Chanukah. Chanukah, the word Chanukah means beginning, we said the Shabbos. Chanukah Sabayis, beginning. What's the beginning of a Jew in religion? What's the beginning? The beginning is fear of Hashem. Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem. And that's why this holiday, which is called the beginning, Chanukas, the mitzvah is done specifically with fire. What does fire represent? Fire represents fear of Hashem. The concept of fire is always an inyan of yira. The pasuk says that when Moshe Rabbeinu first saw the burning thorn bush, he turned away because he was afraid to look. Fire is something that generates fear. Water is something that represents chesed, bringing close. This is why the mitzvah of Chanukah is specifically with fire, with H, representing this union of Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem, that this holiday, which represents a new beginning, the initiation ceremony of the Mishkan, what happened when the Jews first put up the Mishkan? What was the first thing that happened? Two big tzaddikim passed away. A fire came down and destroyed them. Why? What was the purpose of that? They died al Kiddush Hashem to teach the Jews fear. That this is the Beis HaMikdash. You would picture, come in there, laugh and clap and sing and eat and dance. No way. Beis HaMikdash, the first thing you have to know when you come into a place of holiness is fear. The first thing is fear, and then comes love. Never, if a person says, I want to come close to Hashem just with love, I love Hashem, love, without the fear, the whole that person's religiousness, there's no way in the world for it to have a kiyum, to be able to be solid. The introduction, the beginning of one's religion, of one's coming close to Hashem, always refers to a concept of yira, fear of Hashem. Well, I just want to finish this paragraph, then we'll take questions. Just a second. Now, you see this asterisk here. This points us to this small paragraph on bottom that's going to explain this a little bit more elaborately. Then we'll come back and finish the paragraph, then we'll take questions. Pirish, Rav Nosson Zal explains, Ki kol echod v'echod yesh lo gvul v'tzimtzum b'yedias elikusoi lifi erkoi umadregosoi. Each and every single individual has his boundary, his constriction in knowledge of Hashem, according to his level. That which is considered to a person who's on a low level, bechinas b'mufla mimenu, let's take a person who's on level 2. That which is considered way above him, let's say level 5, in knowledge of Hashem, is considered way above him, shehu l'mala mimadregosai, that level is above his level, v'tzorech l'tzamtzeim sichloi shom, and he would have to constrict his brain when it comes to thinking about level 5, we would tell him not to think about that yet, but rather to go to follow a staged approach, climbing gradually in religion, ze etzloi b'chinas b'muflo mimenu, that, to him, is called wondrous to him, it's way above him, the ha'odom hagodol mimenu b'malo hagavoya, a person who's much greater than him. Let's say we're talking about Reuven now. Reuven, who's on level 2, to him level 5 is way above him, and we would tell him not to think about that, not to get involved in that, not to read those books now because they're way above his level. Whereas to Shimon, who's on level 8, or on, you know, who's up to that level, Rabbi Nizal says, "Hu yochay lahasig zois." He can understand that. Rak shehu yesh loy tzimtzum ugvul acher gavoya mimenu. He has a different level, which to him is called way above him, in which he's not allowed to delve into. Sheshom hu tzarech letzamtzim sichloy. Where on that level, let's say on level 10, Shimon would have to constrict his mind and not think that deeply about Hashem. V'chein odom hagavoya oid yoyser. Let's take a third person, Levi, who's up to level 15, let's say. To him, level 10 is not out of his reach. It's not considered too difficult for him. He has a different level, which to him is considered way over his head. Because note, we believe that Hashem is infinite. If Hashem is infinite, then getting to know about Hashem is infinite. So each and every single person, according to whatever level he's on, there is knowledge about Hashem that's way over his head. Each and every person has to figure out what's considered within his reach, within his grasp, and operate on his own level, and think about what he's permitted to think about on his own level, and not to think of that's way over his head. For example, comes to a mitzvah like tzitzis. You get a person who's just coming close to religion. He sees a person wearing tzitzis. He says, "I want you." In other words, what kind of silly thing is this? Why does it have 8 strings? Why doesn't it have 15 strings? You would say a person asking a question like that is being so silly. Why? You're just starting out in religion. You see something, right away you question it in an attacking way. Like, in other words, why 8, why not 15? Did you learn yet the significance of why we do a mitzvah period, and why this mitzvah, and all the different aspects of it, to be able to ask, why 8, why not 7? Once you learn, in other words, each and every person, according to the level of knowledge that he has, that's what determines what he's supposed to be asking at that point. As his level of knowledge increases, does it mean that he's going to have less questions to ask? Let's say a person has a Rebbe, and the person, when he first meets his Rebbe, he has 8,000 units of knowledge of religion. He's learned Shulchan Aruch, Gemara, this, that. As he learns more and more over the years, does that mean that he's going to have less to ask his rabbi? The answer is definitely not. Because each time you bump up a level in religion, it's not like the religion has a certain cutoff point where it goes up to level 8 billion, and as you get closer to that 8 billion, your questions get used up. Baloney. Hashem is infinite. The Torah is infinite. The amount of knowledge is infinite. Therefore, the more you go higher and higher, your questions don't become less. They just keep getting more refined, a higher level question, where the questions that you're asking are questions which a person who's on a level lower than you, he doesn't even realize that there are such questions. Why? Because he's first trying to figure out the basic knowledge of the mitzvahs, the basic laws. But as a person continues to advance, his questions, his level of searching and seeking keeps going to a higher and higher elevation. Rabbeinu Zal says now, V'chein b'chol odam v'odam l'fi madrigosa, each and every single person according to his level. Nimtza, so what do we see from this? Shelechol odam u'lechol berya yesh loy tzimtzum u'gvul miyuchad b'hasoga selikus yisborach l'fi madrigosa. Each and every single person, or each and every single being in creation, has a boundary, has a cutoff point, which to that person, that's his cutoff, or he's not supposed to be going further than that, not supposed to be delving more deeply than that at a certain point in time. Up until that point, he's permitted to ask and to think and to try to understand Hashem, and not more than that. Shakai, and this is the concept of the name of Hashem, Shakai. This is what that name of Hashem teaches us. Sham Razal, the Gemara tells us, Sheyesh Dai Be'elikusei L'chol Beria. Sheyesh Dai, there is a limit. There is a cutoff in religion for every single person, where for this person at this point in time, this is considered enough for him, and if he tries to do more, he's going to be committing a sin. He's going to be doing something wrong. It could cause him harm, damage. Why? Note a simple example. You get a person who says he learns about praying to Hashem. So they tell him that praying is something you daven shachris, mincha, and marav, and there's also this fantastic thing about speaking to Hashem for an hour a day. It's a tremendous thing to be able to speak to Hashem in your own language, to communicate all your problems, and to discuss, to thank Hashem for everything He's done for you, etc., etc. A person gets all aroused and excited, and a person says, 1 hour a day, forget it, I'm going to talk to Hashem for 10 hours a day. And a person starts off doing that, and it seems like, wow, that's great, it's fantastic. In a way, it's great, and possibly a person could keep it up for a few days, but then slowly his fuel peters out, and he's left holding on to very, very little, and chas v'shalom, he could fall away completely. Whereas this same person, had he split up his time, had he had his split of this, had he spoken to Hashem for an hour, and spent the other 9 hours learning, which possibly, on his level, that would have been more important. We know that there are tzaddikim. The Gemara says that the highest peak that a tzaddik could achieve is v'halvai sheyispalalu kol hayem kuloi. That there are tzaddikim who are so great that they can achieve such a high level of attachment to Hashem, that they can daven to Hashem a whole day. Why? Because they've learned so much Torah and so much knowledge that they know how to be able to be medabek, how to attach themselves to Hashem through this highest form of tefillah. But you get a person who's not on that level, who tries to do this same thing. To him, this is called the bechin of penyersu. He's trying for too much, where he could burn out or he could explode, chas v'shalom, and be left with nothing, be left with less than when he started from chas v'shalom. So Rabbi Nizal says now, Shamra Zal Sheesh Dai Belusachal Beria, Hainu, Shekol Beriu Beria Yeshloi Dai Ugvul Utsimtsum Belikusa. Each and every single person has a certain cutoff, a boundary, a constriction in Elukus, in religion. Hainu Biyadiyas Elukusa, in getting to understand Hashem. Hainu Shekol Beriu Beria Yeshloi Dai Vitsimtsum Ugvul Meyuchad Bifnei Atzmai Biyadiyas Elukusa. Each and every single person is unique in this. Each and every single person has his own limitation, which is different from any other person around him, where this is his boundary in getting to know about Hashem, kefi madregusoy, according to whatever level he's on. V'zehu, this is what the Gemara means when it says, sheyesh dai be'elikusay l'chol beria. The word dai means a cutoff, that there is a cutoff in knowledge of Hashem for each and every single person, where if he goes past that cutoff, he's delving into something that's over his head, that he's not permitted to delve into, and it could be considered sinful. Now let's just finish off this little paragraph where we left off. Rabbeinu Zal says, "V'zeh bechinas." This is the concept. Why, when Hashem first revealed Himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah says that Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Listen, I'm going to take you. I'm going to put you inside of a crevice within a stone, and I'm going to cover the stone with my hands, and I'll pass over the stone. Then I'll take my hands off, and you'll be able to see my back, not my front." Why all of this hocus pocus? Why couldn't Hashem simply show Himself to Moshe Rabbeinu clearly? Rabbeinu Zal says, "V'zeh bechinas." This is what the pasuk means when it says that Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "V'samticho benikras hatzur." I will place you in a hole within the stone. Hanemar b'Moshe. This is written about Moshe Rabbeinu. Be'es shezocho lirois ulahasig mashehisig. At the time that he was zeicha to get to see Hashem kaviyochol. Hainu. What does this mean? Rabbein Zal says, Shehivticho Yashem Yisborach Lohagen Olav. Hashem promised him that he would protect him. Sheyihi and Nistar Benikras Hatzur, that he would be kept hidden. Hashem would hide Moshe Rabbeinu in this hole, in this crevice within the stone. Dahainu Bechinas Tzimtzum. That's a concept of a constriction. Hashem confined Moshe Rabbeinu. He placed him within a Tzimtzum. So that his brain should not wander outside of the boundary that it's supposed to be. This is the symbolism that Hashem was showing when Hashem placed Moshe Rabbeinu into the stone. Now note, interestingly, that the Gemara says that what part of Hashem did Moshe Rabbeinu see? The Kesher Shel Tefillin. You see how all of this is connected, how this paragraph is connected. In the beginning we talk about these Moginim Shebedor, that they're the ones who are zeichet to these Meichin Bishleimus, which is represented by Tefillin. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu was zeichet to be masig. When Moshe Rabbeinu got to see Hashem, the Gemara says, what part of Hashem did he see? He got to see the knot of the tefillin in the back of the head of Hashem, kaviyochel. No, this doesn't mean physical tefillin. Hashem doesn't have a physical head. This means in spiritual terms. But note that that's the terminology that's used, that this super high hasag of Hashem, which is the meichen, the kesher shel tefillin specifically. Now, any questions? I don't know about a Jewish nefesh. In other words, I don't know if they come down originally with a Jewish nefesh, or they obtain one at the time that they convert. In other words, there are mitzvos of kedusha that are among the goyim, that are among the goyim that they could pick up. Possible. Right. The answer is that, again, to each, Rabbeinu Zal says in this chapter of the Gemara that this applies to everybody, no question at all. In other words, even to the Tzadik Emes, he does have Makifin. In other words, there is, why? Otherwise there'd be no concept of him. Rabbeinu Zal said that he never stopped rising. Rabbeinu Zal said one of the reasons why he had to pass away was because the body was holding him back. While his neshama was contained within a body, it could only reach so high in knowledge of Hashem and not further. Therefore, he had to shed the body, just like by Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem told him, take off your shoes. He had to strip himself of the shoes, which are the gashmias, in order to be zeichet to a true taikas of Hashem. So too, a tzaddik, after his passing, he keeps rising higher and higher up. The Gemara says it, that tzaddikim have no rest in this world or in the next world. They keep going higher and higher levels in knowledge of Hashem. So that each tzaddik, depending on what level he's on, there is a knowledge of Hashem that's outside of him at that time, which at that moment he's not permitted to reach up to that. Whereas he keeps constantly reaching up to the level that's right outside his grasp. Once he gets that, he pulls that in, he gets a new makif. And slowly he keeps pulling himself up, one hand at a time, you understand? Not skipping steps, not trying to go too high, which could cause a burning up. An example of this is Achia. The Tana Acher, but those four rabbis of the Gemara who went up, who were Nichnasu LaParadis, they went up on a very high level. Because of the fact that one of them didn't come prepared enough, he wasn't well prepared, he saw something that was able to confuse. He used his knowledge in a place where he wasn't permitted to use his. He saw something he didn't understand. He should have kept his eyes closed. For him, at that place, because his eyes couldn't understand what he saw. He saw what appeared to be Chas V'Shalom as two Hashems. What should he have done? Closed his eyes. He should have defaulted to Emunah. That's what Rabbeinu Zal is explaining here. The whole concept of Emunah means the fact that each and every single Jew understands that no matter what level of knowledge he's on, there is a certain wisdom where he must put his knowledge aside and he must default to the Emunah. If at any point in time a Jew's knowledge threatens or challenges in any way his faith in Hashem, that's when he has to put aside the knowledge for a minute and default to faith, and by strengthening the faith will lead him to understand the next level of knowledge. That's the whole concept, where we're up during the day,
We go to sleep at night, and then we get up the next day. Why? It's this concept of seichel. During the daytime, the light, we're working with seichel, advancing. Before we can get to the next level of seichel, we have to first go through a period of night where we close our eyes, we close our brain, we default back to emunah. That allows the brain to rejuvenate itself, to reactivate itself, and then the person continues on the next level. And that's the whole cycle of a person's life in this world. Every day he's supposed to be attaining new seichel that he couldn't get to yesterday. The night is a rest, closes his eyes, closes his brain, be his chachas of the emunah, where he defaults purely to faith. And that's why the most important tefillah that we say before going to sleep is the Shema Yisrael, emphasizing the accepting of faith in Hashem. Then he wakes up in the morning, he starts again right away with Torah, you know, advancing in knowledge, advancing in wisdom.
Mentioned that the fear of Hashem is a prerequisite. That's why the fire of Hanukkah. How often does a person have to take upon himself this fear?
On every single time he wants to advance to a new level of Chachma, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. In other words, just as we show this concept of night and day, you want to get to a new level of day, it must be preceded by a new level of night, which means that before a person can get to any new level in Ahavas Hashem, there's always Yira, then Ahava, then Yira, then Ahava. It's always on every level, the Yira first, then the Ahava. Proof is, when we talk about these spheros, the 10 spheros, you want to attain, we refer to the 10 spheros of Asiya, Yitzira, you know, on all the different levels. What's the first sphere that you get to? Malchus. Malchus is Yira. Il mole mayro'o shal malchus, ishes rayo. In other words, the beginning in Kedusha is always fear. And again, this applies to a person who has a Rebbe. Rebbe, our Rebbe Zichron Avraham mentioned this, Rabbi Rosenfeld Zal emphasizes so much in his Shirim about Rabbi Nosson Zal, that what was unique about him, that he said about himself, that on the day of Rabbi Nazal's passing, when he walked into the room of Rabbi Nazal, he felt the identical fear that he felt for Rabbi Nazal when he walked into his room for the first time when he first met him. Why? This shows that the Yira was constantly nischadesh within him. It's not like he was working with the fear, with memories of the fact that once upon a time he felt an awe. He rejuvenated this awe, this feeling of fear, every single day. When he met Rabbi Nazal, there was always Yira and Ahava coupled together. He never let go of that. In other words, no matter how much hiskaravus he was shown, he never let the Yira fall by the wayside so that when he would be tested, chas v'shalom, he could get kicked out. That's the important thing. If a person has Ahava alone, the Ahava works when there's hiskaravus. What about when you get kicked with a boot and you get kicked 1,000 feet into the air outside? The only thing at that time that can save a person is if he's afraid enough. If he knows that he has no other choice other than to come back, that the leaving is not an option. That he has no other choice other than to come back, that the leaving is not an option.